Chapter 21. Planet Crucible. Day 4 of the Battle of the Tower. 19 years after the Clone Wars.
The dome over the tower gleamed with oily iridescence, as if one of the Offworlder's great airships had bled out its gears onto Crucible. In the evening twilight, its glimmering outshone anything else on the horizon, and it shimmered brighter and coruscated more furiously with every energy blast that struck, every volley from the enemy. Green and yellow fire streamed in perfect lines from distant cannons, rippling the dome's unnatural surface. Burning, crackling shells descended upon the dome with a shriek, exploding in bursts that could have leveled a hillside. Outside the dome, for over a kilometer around the bristling steel tower, the landscape consisted of ash, twisted metal, and the bodies of the dead. Here and there, blades of yellow grass nestled against the scorched frame of a downed flyer. Trenches and stone walls had collapsed. A few brave, foolish men and women crouched low on the ground, firing occasional shots toward the invaders encamped just out of sight. The battle was lost. The young man named Hazram knew as much. More important, it had never been winnable, and he hated himself for not seeing that sooner. He dragged himself through the dust, fingers digging into soil and feet scraping through gravel. He felt something sharp press into his chest and carefully rose no more than a handspan to avoid cutting himself on shrapnel. When he was exposed, he scampered lizard-like toward shelter. When he found himself in the remnants of a trench, he rested. To raise one's head meant death. Incineration by one of the enemy's beam weapons as it swept across the battlefield, murder by a sniper's blaster shot, disintegration by one of the Tower Master's ambulatory machines who seemed eager to target friend and foe alike, impalement on the shards of one of those same machines as it burst apart. So many kinds of death. In the trench, as Hazram patted himself down and felt for blood or injuries, he realized he no longer carried his particle blaster. He laughed with a hoarse and queasy sound. The blaster had run out of power on the first day of fighting. It had been his payment, a clean and polished weapon to rival anything built on Crucible, for signing on to aid the Tower Masters, the off-worlders who called themselves the First Galactic Empire. It hadn't seemed a poor bargain then. He'd fought for so many masters. The Warlord Malkon and his clan. The Opaline Creed with its 100 doctrines and righteous fervor. The Lady of Coins and her dust-shrouded acolytes. And more besides, all with their own labored reasoning as to why they, and only they, could justly claim Crucible as their own. But he couldn't remember the last time he'd cared about his master's justifications for war, or believed Crucible under one ruler would be different from Crucible under another. When emissaries of the Empire had emerged from the tower for the first time in years, declaring that a foe was coming to the planet and that they would arm anyone who pledged to fight, it had seemed like one more opportunity. The best opportunity Hazram had seen in ages. He was too old to keep joining the factions of Crucible one after the next. He was no longer a child, eager to pledge life and spirit to a cause. His past loyalties made him suspect or a pariah. He had few paths left, and if he could arm himself and his allies the way Malkon had, find a faction of his own with power to spare, well, there were possibilities. And the Empire had only asked for one battle. He'd brought Pyrrha with him. Pyrrha, who'd been at his side since the Creed. Pyrrha, who was family. He recruited others like Tar and Mishru, men he had fought against before they'd lost their own masters. He'd found them in the city streets, hiding their brands and robbing passersby. Hazram's band was nearly a dozen in total. Soldiers ready to stop drifting from war to war. When the Empire's troops in white had handed them their rifles, told them to defend the tower against rebels from the sky, Hazram had looked at his band and seen survivors. He'd seen the greatest warriors on Crucible. They'd nearly all died in the first wave. The Tower Masters and their white-clad troops had withdrawn under the dome and let their mercenaries face the rebel vanguard. The Empire must have known the people of Crucible couldn't prevail. The mercenaries were fodder. At best, they were a delaying tactic. 1,000 soldiers and 1,000 particle blasters were nothing against the Offworlder's arsenal. Hazram hadn't seen it soon enough, and he cursed himself. He climbed out of his trench, resumed his crawl across the battlefield and away from the tower. He heard a low humming behind him. Over his shoulder, he spied a metal sphere the size of a human head floating above the wreckage, its lone red eye flicking back and forth. It belonged to the Empire, not the rebels, but Hazram knew what it would do. When it saw something move, it stared. Where it stared, a flyer would soon follow. With the flyers came a rain of destruction. Against his better judgment, Hazram ran. A flyer's bombs would leave nothing but a crater and dust. Not even ruins would be left. He tripped once, again, catching himself both times. After the agonizingly slow crawl, he'd forgotten his own fatigue. Even before the battle, he'd barely been eating, stealing what he could from war camps, or trading trinkets with the merchants of the city. He felt simultaneously light, too light, and as heavy as a mountain. When a long stride took him over the crest of a hill, he was in midair before he saw the sheer drop below him. He tumbled 3 meters down the face of an escarpment, landed hard, releasing a strained, breathy moan as his ankle turned beneath him. He couldn't run again. He pulled his legs to his chest and edged backward against the escarpment into a narrow ditch at its base. He heard the noise of thunder up the hillside and clouds of dust washed over him. At least he'd survived the flyer. They rarely bothered with a second pass. Hazram? The voice was small and confused, like a child's. He let go of his leg, rested his ankle on the cool dirt. So long as he didn't move, it didn't sting. He looked down the ditch and saw a figure stretched out a few meters away, shivering on her side. Pura had changed since her days with the Creed. Hazram had watched her transform from a small, tough, long-haired girl to a tall, lanky, underfed woman who shaved her head to deny any handhold to an enemy. Her face was full of scars, and she'd taken a brand around her mouth during the year she and Hazram had spent separated. He couldn't see the brand now, thanks to the red crust covering her lips and chin.
"I thought the flyers got you," she said.
"Same here," he answered. Pura didn't move closer. Hazram slowly dragged himself to her side, propping himself up. Pura didn't rise. She smelled like every wrong a human body could suffer.
"We lost pretty awful, didn't we?" she asked.
Hazram nodded. He saw that one of her legs was a mess of blood and cloth.
"I made a bad call," he said.
Pura laughed.
"You really, really did," she said. "But you weren't the only one."
He tried to shift closer, adjust himself so that he could get a better look at her leg. She pushed him away without force.
"It's past infected," she said. "Unless you can amputate and cauterize, it's not going anywhere good."
Hazram swore quietly, without ire.
"We can wait for a break in the fighting," he said. "Escape together."
"That was my plan,"
Pyrrha said and smirked. "Glad you figured it out." They sat together, listening to the distant squawking of particle blasters and the rumble of bombs. Part of Hazram's brain, the part that had been fighting for the better part of a decade, starting barely after he'd hit puberty, the part that knew how to ambush an enemy camp at midnight and slit a sentry's throat, or find the weak point of a blockade, ran scenarios, tried to determine what it would take to carry Pyrrha to safety and a surgeon. The rest of his brain struggled with what to say while Pyrrha was still alive.
"We should have gotten out a long time ago," Pyrrha said quietly. "Whatever more there is, it can't be worse than this."
"Next time," Azram said.
"Next time," Pyrrha agreed.
The last thing they talked about before Pyrrha fell asleep was bread pudding. The kind the Creed had made on holy days, with sweet fruits and a charred crust. That was when the sect had possessed gold and food to spare. Pyrrha had adored the Creed's pudding, despite how it made her itch the morning after. Hazrim had shared his bowl with her on the eve of the Hyra Prince's ascension, when Pyrrha had been blindfolded and forced to abstain as punishment for misreciting the doctrines. In the pre-morning light, Hazrim left Pyrrha in the ditch and resumed his crawl across the dewy battlefield. He told himself he would return if he could. If he could find medicine for the gangrene or a cart on which to carry her. By the time he left the hillsides behind, he still believed he had a chance. That night, from the ruin of the Creed's cloister outside the city, he watched the hills burn. Then he knew he would not return after all. The tower fell the next day. Victory then for the rebels. The Empire's soldiers in white had claimed the tower was a transmitter, that it communicated somehow with other planets. That was why they had wanted it preserved. Hazrim wondered if the Empire would be back to build another, or if its rulers would give up on Crucible altogether. It was an idle, dispassionate sort of wonder. Hazrim's comrades were dead. He was weaponless and had no warband to protect him, no clan or faction to feed him. He spent the days following, foraging for food. The birds nesting in the cloister had left a few eggs, enough to sustain him, or sitting in the weeds and grass in a weary haze. Now and again his thoughts drifted to what he might do next. If he returned to the city, he would be recognized as a failure, as the man who had killed his allies chasing false hope, proving himself without value as a leader or a fighter. If he was fortunate, he might not be hunted and killed for his past associations. He would be able to eke out a living as a beggar or a thief, or he might become his father, an ex-soldier turned coward, shunned or pitied by the city's other residents. He could die stabbed in the gut by a child, like his father finally had. He could not return to the city. Almost a week after the tower fell, his head throbbing from a lack of food and sleep, and his unwashed clothes stinking of sweat, Hazrim spotted a trickle of men and women leaving the city and walking the path toward the tower's ruins. Many were armed, but they didn't march as if to war. They were alone and in groups, as cautious as any prudent travelers, but unafraid of being seen. Hazrim watched them from a distance and trailed them without thinking. He had nothing else to occupy himself except survival. They reached the battlefield by noon. The hills had already been picked clean by scavengers, humans stealing weapons from the fallen, scrap metal from machines, animals feasting on carrion. So Hazrim was unsurprised when the line of travelers skirted around the destruction. Hazrim thought of peeling off then, of searching for Pyrrha and the others. But he'd seen enough of his dead to know it would give him no pleasure. He would find no satisfaction in revisiting the site of his failure. So he wandered closer to the travelers, joining them on the path they beat through the yellow grass. As they crested a rise, he saw their destination. A circle of tents and generators and mechanical vehicles. It was an off-worlder camp. And since Hazrim saw no soldiers in white, he presumed it belonged to the rebels. The group descended the rise, past the eyes of sentries who only scowled or smiled, looking the pilgrims over and waving them on. No one stopped until the camp proper. There the travelers were approached, one by rebels, who took them among the tents to converse. Hazrim hadn't seen the rebels up close before. Their clothes were clearly of off-world design. They were perfectly sewn from brightly dyed, tough-looking fabrics, but they were stained and torn nonetheless. Some of the rebels wore helmets or heavy vests, while others barely seemed ready for battle, carrying only their sidearms. Those not engaging the travelers murmured to one another and laughed, or sat near their tents chewing on cakes and silver wrappers. They had the proud, weary look of soldiers after victory. They looked too ordinary to have slaughtered Hazrim's comrade so swiftly.
"Next!"
The voice was powerful, resonant as a bomb blast. Hazrim realized he had found his way to the fore of the line. Approaching him was a monstrous, four-armed alien with a demon's head, a brown, bulbous, wide-mouthed mass topped with a crest of bone. One of its arms gestured Hazrim forward, its nightmarish head smiling toothily, its eyes shining with impatience. Hazrim's comrades were dead. He could not return to the city. He stepped forward, and the alien led him between a pair of silver-green tents.
"We prefer to conduct these within a settlement, but we were warned our approach might be viewed as aggression. I promise you, we have no designs on Crucible."
"Not a lot here worth taking," Hazrim said. He glanced about the camp, idly noting escape routes. He did not know what the alien expected or wanted. He did not especially care. The creature shook its head with a wince, but left whatever troubled it unspoken. Instead, it lowered itself to the dust, sitting cross-legged with a sigh. When Hazrim had joined it, the alien asked,
"So, why do you wish to join the rebellion against the Empire?"
Was that why the camp was here? Hazrim felt a fool for not realizing it earlier. They were recruiting. He could have turned and walked away. Instead, he stared at the alien for a while and finally said, "The Empire killed my friends." It was true in its way. Hazrim held no grudge against them, but the Tower Masters had arranged the execution even if they hadn't pulled the trigger. The creature nodded slowly. Two meaty hands wove together.
"You seek revenge, then?"
Hazrim watched the alien and let the question tumble in his skull. He could get revenge. He could wrest a blaster from one of the rebels, shoot everyone in the camp before he was overwhelmed. He pictured it, worked the scenario. There was no pleasure in it. "Not really," Hazrim said.
"Good,"
the creature said, and again offered that toothy smile.
"Revenge is a fuel that burns too swiftly. But I will tell you this much. Should you join us, we too will mourn your friends."
Hazrim barked a laugh. The creature clapped its lower hands together as if pleased, before launching into an explanation of its warband's place in the galaxy. It claimed to represent the Rebel Alliance's 61st Mobile Infantry, a company of troops that moved from star to star at the whims of its superiors. Its unit had fought the Empire on 1,000 battlegrounds across 100 worlds. It was bloody work, the creature said, and the rewards were few. But when Hazrim asked, it assured him there was sufficient food and clothing and arms for all, save in the most dire circumstances.
"How often are circumstances dire?" Hazrim asked.
The creature chuckled softly. It sounded like a drumbeat.
"More often than we'd like."
It went on to question Hazrim about his combat experience. Had he fought in a unit before? Could he use a blaster?
"So young,"
it said with a shake of its head. When Hazrim told it a second time, it seemed not to hear him the first, how long he'd been killing. When the questions were done, the alien spoke lovingly of exotic sights. Endless deserts, planets of islands adrift on clouds, countless species that the company had been privileged to encounter. It cautioned Hazrim as well that the company rarely retraced its path. If he signed on, he would not find it easy to return to Crucible, though he would be permitted to depart the company if he wished. Hazrim pushed the alien's voice out of his consciousness as the creature emphasized the just cause of the rebels and the terrors of the Galactic Empire. That part of the speech Hazrim could deliver himself. All calls to war were the same, and he'd been hearing them his entire life. But the thought of leaving Crucible? He would never have to go back to the city, never have to face the emptiness there, or forge in the blood-stained grass outside its walls. His father had survived among the stars. He was certain he could too. And if he could not, he could die 100 planets away from home. The alien asked if he was truly willing to fight the Empire's evil for little in return, if he understood what might be asked of him and the heartbreaking scale of the enemy's actions. A war is a war, Hazrim said. You can't show me anything I haven't seen. That was the wrong answer. The alien's eyes closed and its head bowed, and it let out a warm and pungent breath. Then it squared its shoulders and looked to Hazrim again.
We have many hired guns already, it said.
It was a rejection of the most oblique sort, but Hazrim recognized it anyway. Just like the factions of Crucible, the Rebellion wanted minds it might mold to its cause. Young minds, idealistic minds. Hazrim would not find a place there. Yet the alien kept speaking, struggling for words.
But if we can show you nothing new, perhaps you can show us something. No man is only a weapon.
The creature sounded almost hopeful. Hazrim did not understand why, but it was giving him another chance. He glanced around the camp, tried to guess at the rebels' needs. He didn't understand the workings of their technology. Even the glossy sides of their tents seemed magical. Only their most basic weapons were familiar to him. He could sell them Crucible, tell them which factions to obliterate first if they wanted the planet. But the creature had already assured him of their intent. He looked at the other travelers from the city. They shifted uncomfortably in line or spoke avidly or cockily or begrudgingly with rebel representatives. He saw one of the rebels glance at the alien, nod his head, before sending the traveler at his side, a youth with a thick beard and tattered robe, to wait by a tent. Hazrim knew what he had to do. He's going to be a problem, Hazrim said, and jutted a thumb toward the bearded youth.
Oh?
The creature asked. Maybe he said the right things, Hazrim said, but he's trying too hard to impress. Show he's grown. Show he survived a tough life. Maybe he has, for all I know. But I bet he can't even use a blaster.
As I said, we have many hired guns already. Perhaps he has a spark. Dedication.
Maybe, Hazrim said and shrugged. But he's never going to admit what he doesn't know if he keeps looking for approval. You don't break him of the habit, he'll get someone killed on the battlefield. The creature studied Hazrim, its bulbous neck expanding and contracting.
How confident are you?
Hazrim shrugged. Not hugely. Give me 20 minutes with him. I could be pretty sure.
Why?
The creature asked. Hazrim smiled wryly. You sign on to enough armies, you start to recognize the people to stick close to. The creature nodded and strode away without a word. One hand beckoned Hazrim to follow. For nearly an hour they walked silently about the camp, drifting within earshot of the recruiter's conversations. Hazrim said nothing unless prompted, but sooner or later the creature asked him his assessment of each of the travelers. Hasram noted a scarred, one-armed veteran who spoke passionately about his desire to serve a just cause and told the alien that the man would be slow to learn off-world technology, but otherwise a potentially excellent asset. He warned the creature about a woman wearing the brands of one of the most brutal successors to Malkan. She'd be fierce, but she'd learn to fight in a spice-addled haze, and she'd be a wreck if she were made to fight lucid. At the end of the hour, the creature led Hasram back to where they had begun and asked,
"What if I were to accept them all? If I told you my captain had ordered me to take on anyone who fought for the right reasons?"
"I'd say your captain needs to look out for his people better." The creature seemed unruffled.
"Could you teach them? Could you make them into soldiers you would fight beside?"
Hasram glanced about the camp again, at the travelers and the rebels. "I wouldn't have much choice," he said. "If they were my comrades, I'd do what I had to in order to make them ready."
"Then, perhaps we have a place for you after all."
Hasram Nemir did not fully believe he had left the planet Crucible until Gadrin, the creature from the camp, walked him to the viewport of the starship Thunderstrike. He'd ridden a dropship up from the planet's surface, nearly vomited down his shirt in the back of the windowless box as it rattled and clanged viciously, and he'd swayed unsteadily while descending a ramp into the Thunderstrike's docking bay. He'd never seen so much metal and plastic in one place before. The Rebel Alliance's 61st Mobile Infantry didn't need to conquer Crucible. If it wanted the planet, it could buy it. He stood alone at the viewport long after Gadrin had moved on. Crucible seemed small and petty amid the stars. A mottled sphere of green and gray and yellow, too insignificant to hold a single city, let alone nations. He thought of what he was leaving behind to fly away in an alien cage. He had not expected to miss the yellow grass or the clouds. They had been fundamental to his existence. Now, they had been stripped away. Yet when his mind turned to Pura, to his father, to everyone he had left far below, he felt as weightless and free as the ship. He was out at last.